Happened with Reef Bump is sponsored by Polo Reef, Champion Lighting and Supply, and GHL.
Light is okay. Everything's okay.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? And welcome back to another episode of Rapping with Reef Bum. I'm your host, Keith Berkelhammer. So today, I welcome back Claude Schumacher from Fauna Marine. What's going on there, Claude?
Oh, it's fucking late here, you know. Good morning.
That's a way to start the show off with an F-bomb. There you go.
What an intro. Yeah,
come on, I got new sponsors there, Claude. We gotta like, you know, be kind of start off at least a little, you know, on the down low there, and then maybe work our way up to that sort of thing. But no, I appreciate you, man. I appreciate you you coming on the show. It's 1 o'clock in the morning in Germany, and I think you're the only one up, right?
No, we Germans work 24 hours a day, you know. That's why we're so strong in the work here. Everybody's sleeping. No, you know, you do really great job, and I really like to be here. And there's not many places where you can do that over so long time, and we have really good talks together. So, and for that, it's absolutely clear that I will come if I get an invitation from your side.
Well, I appreciate that, man. So before we start digging into it with Claude, I want to take care of some business and thank the sponsors of this show. My sponsors are really important because they make the show possible with their support. And that means a lot since I want to continue to bring, you know, awesome guests like Claude to help foster this learning environment here. So Polo Reef is one sponsor, and although they don't engage in product sales, their sponsorship of the channel stems from Andrew's belief in supporting individuals dedicated to educating and sharing information about the hobby. So with that in mind, I highly recommend you check out Polo Reef's latest video, Quarantine Basics Part 2. It has a wealth of information on the Polo Reef YouTube channel. Another sponsor is Champion Lighting and Supply. And I want to point out that they have this really cool foot pedal switch. See if I can get it in the camera here. Not a great job of showing this off here, Claude. But it's a foot pedal switch from Blue Line that can be used for frag bandsaws, which I've used it for. You can touch the pedal to turn the bandsaw on and off. It can also be used for pumps and power heads for water changes. Very handy. If you're interested in picking one up, then visit championlighting.com. And then finally, my third sponsor is GHL. Personally, I'm all in on GHL products. I've had a lot of success using their dosers, Proflux controllers, Mitra's lights, KH directors, etc. They produce high quality German engineered products. So for more information or purchase their stuff, you can visit aquariumcomputer.com/USA. I also sell their products on reefbomb.com. All right, with that out of the way there, Claude, you know, one question that popped into the chat before the show started was about German-made products and how, you know, why is it that so many high-quality products come out of Germany? Do you have an answer for that, Claude?
No.
No?
No, because, you know, there are some companies, and the reason was that we have, many years ago, it was forbidden to keep angel fishes and other type of fishes in Germany. It was a ban, which was only in Germany. So we start very early in the coral keeping, while the rest of Europe and other countries still had a lot of reef fishes and has not so the focus on the coral. So that was the beginning, was very early in Germany about the starting products for coral keeping. But nowadays, you find a lot of good companies around the world. You find a lot of snake oil and a lot of copies. That's the same here in Germany. It's the same. So some importing American products here, glue their name on it. Many do Chinese products and other also. So I think it becomes more and more difficult to find good companies. And it's still a handful like it was some years ago. But the only difference is nowadays we have tons of them more. And for customers nowadays, it's absolutely impossible to find out where is the base of knowledge, where is a real development in things. And like I say, you find a lot of companies which have some very specific and good ideas and good products. So I don't think it's to say it's only Germany. So we have also good in around the world. I know also some very good companies and respectful companies in the US, definitely. So the fight to be a little bit better becomes harder, but we are still okay with that.
So I don't know if I'm opening up a can of worms, but you know, you've mentioned to me before offline about the challenges sometimes with the government there in Germany. I think every country has its challenges. Do you have any thing you wanted to say specifically about that, or should we just pass on that topic? Pass?
No, I cannot pass it. In my talks with my American friends in the last half a year, I only can say one thing. If you think that your government is bad, then you don't know ours. You have no idea how this can go out about the gas prices. So you have really cheap gas prices, definitely. We are four times higher. We pay the three times more tax, and they send all the money out of in the country, but not for our farmers or something like that. So ours be way more worse from my side of view, from my side of the ocean. So everybody looks like this. But it's, I think reefing should be reefing and not political stuff. It's I think it's bad enough that the political discussions coming into the reefer scene some years ago, which was, I think it was a hidden law, I think it's the name of it, that politics has nothing to search in this hobby. And I think we should keep this law for us together worldwide. Don't talk about politics, because it's always a bad situation.
Hear, hear. Yeah, let's just focus on talking reef.
Yes, yeah. That makes way more fun.
So, you know, one thing that, you know, we've had conversations in the past, and I know you've mentioned this on I think, a past live that I had you on, in terms of Fauna Marine being sort of unique in that it's an ICP test provider. It sells, you know, a bunch of different products. But you guys also do have a coral farm, right? And yeah. So that is sort of unique in that sense, that you're a company that has all these products and an ICP testing service. And you also have a coral farm where you raise corals. And tell us a little bit more, Claude, about the reason Fauna Marine has a coral farm in Germany. And I'm going to show some footage that I took from one of your videos, past videos of this coral farm.
The coral farm is the heart of all the things. So we are coral farmers from beginning on. Like I say, I started '84 with coral keeping. So we had the first Indonesian imports and selling them from Hawaii. We get stuff from Miami and from Indonesia, and we're selling them around of Germany. There was no overnight express during these days. It was by train, so overnight express by train. So we put the boxes to the train station and give it to the people there, and sending the animals around and the typical styrofoam boxes like we have today. And so the coral farming by itself, the keeping the corals, breed them, finding specific ways how to farm them was since '84, and then in the '90s and in the mid '90s we go then to Bali and to the Philippines and give there the idea how to breed them in the sea. On the Philippines it doesn't work, so we built their farms. That was quite okay, and we teach the divers to take other fishes, a different way of how to catch the fishes, how to keep them, and how to transport them. So we build the export station there, and I'm writing the standards for the MAC, Marine Aquarium Council, how to take fishes, how to bring it there. This was a success there, but it was a failure then to bring it to Europe or to the US due to the political situation in the Philippines, that they still today they say it's not possible to breed corals, so they don't open the market for the people there. On the same time, a little bit before, we developed the farming in Bali a little bit, bring the ideas of fragmentation and how to breed birds to Bali, and there it releases to it develops to industry nowadays, where we get all the corals, or the most from the import corals coming nowadays from the farms, even the wild cod cords are very often farm cords, this which were too big, so they break it up and sell it for $20 more, then because it's wild. A very funny thing. And so that's later for the marine coming, that we want to have some products to increase the quality of the farms. And then at the same time, we come to the idea how we can control everything. And then we see that the ICP stuff can have the potential to do a technical change in the industry. And so we were clear that it needs several companies to offer this service to become a technical change in the world. So if something only one company made, it could not have the potential if several want. So that's also the reason why it's quite good if we have 3, 4, 5 companies offering the service, because then you have the development between the companies, which brings the power on the road. If only one company made it, usually they start and then they stay on that what they developed at the beginning and has no development in the future. And mostly then other companies have the potential then to develop it to a technology which is useful like it is today. But it took also many years till we get this technology on the road, like now. And now we stay here, have these 3, 4 different type of work inside one company, which makes it quite difficult sometimes, because you cannot focus on one thing. But on the other side, it's the heart of the business that we have everything under control. So from the product over the ICP and the farm. And so every type of salt or product we use in the farms by itself or in other farms, so we have immediately the feedback about the quality or about changes we have to do and that we have to do every day. So still.
So the primary purpose of the farm is really to for product research to kind of inform you guys in terms of if you're making any tweaks to products or if you're launching any new products, you're kind of seeing how corals react. And you also sell corals too, right?
Yeah, we sell corals. So we produce actually around between 800 and 1200 fracs a week about what we produce over the farm. And nowadays we are 95-96% in own breeding. So we need, sometimes we buy from other farmers now specific because we are too small, we need to build it new. But the most now is farm breed inside our farm, and that's what we sell. So we reduce the imports massively.
Were you importing maricultured wild corals, or were you just kind of bringing in stuff from other? Well, I guess that would be maricultured or wild, right? If you're bringing stuff in.
Yeah. But we stopped about one year ago. We stopped about to do the own imports. It becoming more and more difficult to keep the systems clean from all the parasites and bacterial issues coming from the Indonesian farms or from Australia and now from Malaysia and from other countries, and because the farm is too small for this. Because you need space and you need to protect your farm corals from these parasites coming in, and it becomes more and more difficult for us because the breeding is so successful that the farm is completely full. And so we stop it, and sometimes we search some corals and new species, new colors that we can develop our farm. But it's more cherry pick, becoming more a type of cherry picking, and we focus now also on fish breeding and inverts. So I have some new stuff there who is really really well known in these things and doing the ornamental fish breeding since more than 10 years. And so we just now starting to collecting all the pairs and that we can move forward.
You mentioned bringing in corals and dealing with the pests and the bacteria. I'm assuming you're talking about potential pathogenic bacteria, that's bad guy bacteria. What is your process in terms of processing new corals that come in terms of quarantine and dipping and all that stuff?
We have a quarantine station. The quarantine station is full with other big colonies and also some fracs, mostly the fast-growing ones, so red Monte Cap, for example, Styloporas, some Porites, some Acroporas. So it's a weird mixture. So then we look on this corals, we spray them. We don't do a too strong dipping or any other causes because we find out that this causes the problems what we have. We also don't work with antibiotics because that's something which is totally difficult. It's forbidden in Europe, so we have not the possibilities to sell and to use that. And I'm not unlucky about that loss, because if you know how antibiotics works and how dangerous they are for resilience against bacteria, even when we deal with viper bacteria, which can, which are for us also harmful, I think it's a better way at the end. It makes it sometimes difficult, I know, but I don't want to deal with these dangerous antibiotics, like Cipro is a very dangerous antibiotic. It causes a lot of problems, and you release that stuff over the skimmer into the air, you breathe it, and this causing then the resiliences. So I think it's not a good idea to spray it around the world. But okay, every country has its own laws. What we do is I keep the temperature cool. That's the first thing. So we keep it about 24 degrees centigrade. Because over 25 centigrade, vibrio can spread up massively. And due to the situation in Indonesia, actually, how they treat the cores in the export farms, sometimes, so they work very often with neomycin sulfate in very high amounts. So they go sometimes till 600 grams of neomycin sulfate in 250 gallons, which is a 20 times more as the usual dosing you have to do. In my opinion now, it's way too much dipping. It's way too much treatment. So we reduce the part and the type of bacteria on the coral, which keeps the coral healthy. And in this case, when these are missing, we know meanwhile that some vibrio and some not pathogenic bacteria, which is part of the holobiont, becoming pathogenic due to the possibilities they have. If we treat them after again with antibiotics, it might be help over a short time. And maybe the one or the other cores can get some other bacteria from the other cores, because this also, what we know meanwhile, goes very fast. And due to the situation that every core has a different type of bacteria and a different type of guest bacteria, which they can get from outside, what we do is we do very fast. We keep fresh live rock into and in the near of the cores and have some old stable cores into the system, and we see that then the cores starting way faster and way better back to a normal activity as we have when we treat it with too much dipping. If we find parasites which you can remove by hand, then we dip them shortly. We do it very gently, and then we keep them under not too much light conditions, over lower temperature conditions, about 2-3 weeks before we move them to another section, and we keep healthy corals all way around of these corals. And that is way better in the stability over the time, as we find out if we treat them with antibiotics or whatever.
Yeah, Greg Carroll says people over here in the U.S. are using Cipro on their aquariums on the regular. And, you know, oxalic acid, that is a seemingly happening a lot more than I guess I'm not going to say in the past, but it seems like people are doing that. I've done that. Do you think every reef tank, even if it's a healthy reef tank, has some percentage, small percentage of pathogenic bacteria? Do you think that's something that's in every reef tank, and that you know, when conditions, you know, stability gets out of whack or something gets out of whack, that the pathogenic bacteria take advantage of that situation and then proliferate in that regard? Do you think that's true? I mean, I'm not sure if we have research on that or not, but what's your feeling on that?
So there is research on it, on what happens with bacteria under certain conditions in the reefs and how the reaction of some of the bacteria is then. So I think it's we see the situation too much on black and white situation. So good bacteria is bad bacteria. So, and this is not that what is the truth. This is a little bit the same with us also. We as humans deal with bacteria on the skin and in stomach. And if something happens wrong, you know, too less sleep, too long journey, bad food, and which brings our microbiome not in good condition, you can feel it very fast and you know that you have a very bad day. The same is with the chorus also. What I find out and what is my meaning at the moment is that the problem what we have is not that we have deal with a certain species of Vibrio, a certain species of Acrobacteria, which come in and makes everything ill. What we deal with is a stress situation and infection with bacteria which the chorus don't know, because from other regions, or with a brine shrimp. It's importing very often over brine shrimp coming from Chinese fish farms, and there we have some Vibrio bacteria we found which have nothing to search in a reef or in related with corals. And if then they are dipped the whole day and the good bacteria are reduced, then it's possible that some of the normal bacteria which are under control with a healthy microbiome becoming pathogenic and starting to act pathogenic against the corals. So we also deal with some specific bacteria like Acarixetia, some of these species who are living in the coral, in the cells of the skeleton. And as soon as the nutrients becoming too high or some harsh changes, like you say, it's possible that they start to grow faster. It's an overfertilization. And then they take amino acids and vitamins out of the corals and let them suffer at the end. So that's why we're losing only a few type of corals. Yeah. And definitely the Vibrios the Acrobacteria plays a role. So this, I think it's really found out. And the Vibrios, we have also the problems that we bring them in the reef tanks all over food, like with clams, for example, though they have a different type of Vibrio. But in my opinion, we treat the corals too much and gave them too less time to recover and to get their good bacteria back after the transport after time. So it starts in Indonesia with antibiotics. It goes to the wholesaler with antibiotics. It starts then to the dealers with dips and antibiotics, and then the next one. And everybody has his own recipe, which he has luckily found out that he mixes five different antibiotics, which kills everything. And then he find out, oh, I have now the perfect recipe. Maybe for a few time, but then they die later because they have no more bacteria, so they can survive or can eat. It's a very complex situation. It's very difficult to find the research on it. In my opinion, it's time to go a little back, installing a good quarantine system with some easy growing corals, with big corals, it can also be soft corals like ever, and some pieces of a good live rock, fresh live rock, and then the corals healing much better and be way more stable, and don't create after such treatments too much with boring algae, with cyano in the skeleton, or with green algae in the skeleton. So this is my thing that I found.
So what I'm hearing from you is that folks that do have bacteria or antibiotics available to them, that in your opinion, it probably doesn't make sense to dip incoming corals in some sort of antibiotic cocktail, because that's just going to be too stressful for the corals. And what you're saying is that it makes a lot more sense to have a good population of healthy corals and live rock, a good microbiome already intact, to help those corals, those incoming corals, do well.
Yeah, well, I can tell you what happens at the koi fish scene in industry is that what will happen in the corals if we don't stop this with these massive antibiotics using. In the koi actually is that we have the situation that we have a bacteria called columnaris. And columnaris I know since many years. So it creating some issues with ornamental fish. It comes to the koi. Then they treat the koi with all type of antibiotics, and most make it wrong because they have not the knowledge how to treat. And now we have the situation that the columnaris is resilient against all the antibiotics we know. The only way what they can save their koi is when they see it at the very first beginning signs, and then they treat them with chlorine dioxide, it's the name, I hope it's the right English word for it, and to oxidize the whole tank, which brings a lot of problems with the filter bacteria then, and many people losing their whole COIs on a simple bacteria like columnaris, which we know for 30 years. And this is what will happen if we don't stop that and we do it in the same way. We will have the same situation in the next 10 years because we're producing this resilience about the thing. And what is for me the worst thing is if that thing is sold to families, to people who put the antibiotics in the reef tank and the skimmers take them all out over the way how skimmers is working. Cost them to take care of the antibiotics there. And the resilience then, if your kids and we are resilient against Vibrio diseases, it's or a mycobacterium, it's really not a joke. So I'm not the guy who say, hey, it's great, everything works well, because now I feel this. If a coral is really ill, and you see that she is infected, then do it a bath in a proper way, and after take care that the antibiotics will be destroyed before putting into the.
What would
That's okay, but not in preventing.
What would you do if you had, you know, a coral or two in trouble, and you don't have the antibiotics to do a dip? What would you be dipping with?
Which H2O2 is possible.
Hydrogen peroxide.
Hydrogen peroxide with a very low amount over 1 to 3 minutes. You can also use our product, which is a Silidip, that's against ciliates and bacteria, but in Europe we are not allowed to print it on the bottles. There you can use it. We have some other stuff on it. You can use some dips are really working with the oils which are on it. Very slowly, and keep it cold. So keep it under 23, 22 degrees. Raise up the halogens. Mostly it helps. And antibiotics should be really the last way what you try.
What about a series of large water changes?
In my opinion, yes. Suck all these dust which lays around the cores, put them out, and add some live rocks. So cold temperature, lower light, add some live rocks and raise the halogens. So iodine, fluorine, and bromine and strontium should be high. Nutrients level should be low. And then mostly you can turn down, even if they're really in bad conditions. It took some weeks. It's hard, but it's possible.
I know you're not I believe you're not a fan of dosing bacteria on a daily basis to an established reef tank. But is there anything to potentially dosing bacteria on a regular basis that could help in keeping that balance right in terms of good guy versus bad guy bacteria? So you're dosing good guy bacteria daily to your reef tank. There's another question here about whether or not, you know, the corals would take that bacteria in as food. We could ask you that after this question, but I'm just kind of curious, Claude, what are your thoughts in terms of dosing bacteria to kind of keep that ratio of good guy to bad guy, you know, in the favor of the good guy bacteria?
Okay. In the most standard bacteria products, or all bacteria products which are produced in the world, we are not able to produce that what is on a live rock. So we even cannot detect all of them. Even if you have good companies like the Aquabiomics guy, it's only a small part what we can detect, which we know what is on live rocks. So, and what is in change with the cores. That's the first thing. The second thing is, yes, there are some products on the market which you can use to help the cores out, definitely. So, but there's a difference between the typical filtration bacteria and some specific probiotic bacteria which can help cores out. So we work with a specific product which have a carrier, and we have three probiotic bacteria on it who fight against pathogenic, and the fighting, it's a nice wording, but they push them away, they destroy them, and they keep him away from the stuff. And this helps the cores massively against a situation while they are infected. I'm not a fan to dose that all the time as long everything's okay. So as long as everything is okay, you don't need to dose that. So it's really better you keep your food and your nutrients level and let the cores run around. That's everything is okay. And if you see there is a problem, then you can start with the standard bacteria. And if the problem raises up, then you can use the specific bacteria. Because then you have a tool in your hand before using antibiotics. I no, I'm not that fan. I don't dose in our farms, and the farms run now 16 years, and we produce some cores. I don't dose bacteria all the time. I keep them for me as a tool if something is not working well, to push the tank in the right direction.
What product, if I may ask, in terms of the bacteria that you're talking about using?
That's the Wipe X. It's the name of it.
What's it called?
So that's Wipe X, Vibrio X. So the cross for killing the Vibrios. Also same, we have to find fancy name in Europe. So we are not allowed to say it's against Vibrios and other things. We can say in the US, but we cannot say in Europe because it's a question of national security, you know. That's why we have so funny explanations on the German product sometimes. And we have to talk this in shows. And even that is maybe difficult. The point is that these bacteria are put on a carrier. And this carrier is working a little bit like reef snow. So the cores do intake the spores of the bacteria. And so the bacteria can work inside the cores, which is very important. On the LPS, it works faster than on the SPS. This product is used once a day, about 10 to 14 days, and then the most rapid infection, microbacterial infection, can be pushed away and bring the tank back to the normal way instead of using antibiotics. And we need to do this research here and development here because we have not the possibility to get antibiotics.
Who makes VIBX?
For the marine?
Oh, you guys.
We do that.
That's a fine marine product. that a new product? I didn't recall hearing about that product. Is that a relatively new product?
It's quite new, and it's on the way to the U.S. actually, to the distributor. But we didn't start the advertising yet in the U.S. So shortly before the Intersu, so in May, is the biggest worldwide show for aquarium and pet industry. It's in Nuremberg. It's in South Germany, and it's incredibly huge. So you can put all the shows in the U.S. together, and you even don't have a quarter of it. Worldwide, everybody come and stand to South Germany, and we companies usually, a few months before the show is, we don't talk about new products, so we keep them all in treasure, and then we can go to the show and can say, look what we have made.
There you go.
Things.
A big reveal.
Most of them are not deliverable because everybody's not finished. But we try to be finished. So I don't have fun of these games. So if a product is finished and it can't help, we put it out of the market.
There you go. So ReefSight, Sonny has this question I just referred to. What are your thoughts on Claude about providing coral nutrition through bacteria as a primary source of nourishment? Do you think, I guess it depends on the bacteria that you're dosing?
Yeah, that's the problem to know.
A lot of it, you don't know what you're doing, right? You don't know what's in it.
Yeah, that's it. So nobody knows what's in. Nobody knows if that specific core, what I want to feed, have fun of this, what we do there. So there are some nice ideas actually around, which I also get, to put bacteria into the food, let it stay for 2-3 days over 1 day to open it. Good companies, and there are a few to do that, working with that type of work to have some prebiotic or probiotic bacteria in the food since long time. In Europe, still again the problem, it's not allowed to do that, so we don't write it on the box. And in US, it's allowed to do that. I can say 4 or 5 companies has the right bacteria once. Another 4 or 5, I don't know what they do. So it's for me, it's senseless. But okay, bacteria are in. And so this idea is not, it's quite old. So if you go on the Minas, what we do, which is a very specific product, it's a natural plankton stuff. And this plankton containing the right bacteria is what we want. So we don't need to add artificial ones. So we're using the plankton. We prepare the plankton in a specific way that you have all these ingredients in. And if the coral take it in, it's the same. If she takes the full plankton into the body, and this also releases the right bacteria into the food. So this is done. Even if some private company is coming around and telling, we push them things together and we have a good effect on it, it can coming quite dangerous on it. If you have the wrong bacteria on it, then you infected your core. So it's even not a good idea. If you have enterococcus, so you don't wash your hands and prepare the food and let it stay in the heat, and put also some bacteria on it, so I don't know if the chorus will like it. So I did understand this way. I understand that people want to develop the things, but I sometimes don't understand why some people think that all the industry, all the people working now for 30, 40 years with corals don't have the idea before. So when it's a simple idea. So that means that all the people around and all the companies around producing type of good products are completely stupid and don't think about what can cause bacteria, probiotic bacteria. It's in the market in 30 years. So, and it's used in 30 years in food. We do that. I cannot say officially that we do that. And other people also do that, and they have also the right good bacteria on it. And maybe we can talk about the amount of bacteria which is in the food, but nobody wants to talk in the industry about it due to the regulations. So, but we need them in because the coral need it.
So, you know, I had Sanjay and Mike Paletta on the show a number of weeks ago, and great guys. Yeah. So we were talking about you. And I think it was Mike that said, you know, Claude doesn't believe in dosing bacteria to a reef tank because the bacteria that we have in our reef tank are always reproducing. So why does it make sense to keep dosing, you know, bacteria when you've already got a population of bacteria that's multiplying as it is? And so I would assume that if you've got a healthy reef tank, you've got corals that are thriving and looking really good, why mess with that, right, with dosing bacteria?
Yeah.
I answered my own question.
Yeah. I even don't need to ask you. So the products are great, so don't misunderstand. So the products nowadays, there are always some very good products on the market, which can be very helpful as long as I have a problem. But why I should dose them while I have no problem? This causes problem very often. And keep them in back. When you start a reef tank, you don't want to use live rock. Perfect product. You can use that. And they work, definitely. It showed. But if you have live rock, why you should? We are still not able to produce that quality of bacteria, which we find in reef, on corals, and on reef, and on live rock. It's impossible to produce them.
You know, so I do dose bacteria. You know, I admit that. And but you know, I think the primary reason why I'm dosing bacteria is to help with nutrient control. You know, and to help absorb some nitrates and some phosphates. And so I'm also, you know, in the process, almost done resetting two big display tanks that were very SPS dominant. And you know, so those corals were the ones that I thought were probably doing the majority of the nutrient exporting. So, you know, I'm still bacteria dosing to kind of like, I think, fill that gap. But, you know, when I had Sanjay and Paletta on, we were talking about carbon dosing, you know, and they both carbon dose. And so that's pretty much what they're doing to help, you know, control their nutrient issues. What do you feel about carbon dosing? Do you think that's something that, you know, most reef keepers should think about? For nutrient control, if you've got some nutrient control issues, or is that a risky proposition? Because if you dose too many bacteria in terms of the carbon dosing, then you could get into trouble.
Okay. The problem is now that we have very different possibilities to dose carbon. So sometimes it's ethanol, sometimes if you have... specific products, like I think Red Sea have one, or VSV is one, whatever. And it's a huge talk about many years now, which one is the best one. We need some carbon sources for the corals, but not a lot. So that means if you dose carbon in your system, you usually want that the nitrate goes down. What happens is then always the same. If you dose carbon into a system, you provide the bacteria who reduces the nitrate down back to the ammonia, that you reduce that. But the nitrogen cycle is pH neutral. So that means if you add ethanol as a sample or methanol as the main source of carbon sources, you block the type of bacteria, the nitrobacter and nitrospira, that produce the nitrate. and you push the bacteria to reduce the nitrate. So usually in this nitrogen cycle, if they reduce the nitrate, they produce H2CO3, carbon dioxide, carbon acid in the water. And this will be taken by the bacteria who producing the nitrate. So that's why the nitrogen cycle is then pH neutral. But reproducing with the dosing of carbon acid too much acids. And these acids take the pH down. And this pH, which go down, will then release the nutrients back from the depots again into the aquarium. So if the tank is full with corals and you want to push them a little bit down, then you can use it. If you have a reef tank which is not well filled with corals and have not good place skimmer, and you overfeed them, and then you take the carbon in, you will not get the results you want. That's why so many people fail on these systems. And in the moment they stop, immediately the nutrients are back, because the only thing what you produce is in this case, is you're producing the depot effect, so that everything will be absorbed into the rocks, into your surface. The good thing is to find out if the tank is built well. That means the skimmer is clean, the sump is clean, so that the water movement around due to the technical is big, strong enough and big enough and to keep everything clean so that the nutrients go down.
What do you mean by clean? What's your definition of clean skimmer sump?
I find so many sumps which are completely full of dirt.
Detritus.
And depots. So detritus, precipitations. We have a tons of large reefers outside. So that's, and they only search
a lazy very ass reefer syndrome.
Yes, it is like that. And there's the most of that people we have down there. If you ask him if that is clean, did you have a good skimmer on it? No, I don't clean the pump the last 2 years. So, and the pump works with maybe 30% of the power, but then the product is bad, or dissolved is bad, or something like that. But reef keeping is a type of discipline, not motivation. So if you start reef keeping with motivation, you lost. Because motivation goes up and down. What you need is discipline. And I can understand, you know, it's you have to clean it, you have to do it, it costs a lot of money. But at the end, if you have a dog, you have also to go out. So that's difficult. And your fish poops into the house, so you have to clean it. So that's a very simple thing. And that happens. And then it's mostly the wrong food. There is so many food on the market which has not enough proteins or which have not enough fatty acids. And fatty acids, you need to reduce a phosphate there and to keep the water chemistry clean. And also that not happens. So they have no idea about iodine level, fluorine level. And you need all that elements that the corals can take the nutrients in and can push it into grow. So, and everybody wants to have it simple. And so it's a perfect market for such product, which provides you, that's like the diet pills, you know, take these two pills and you're losing weight. So that's the same shit, like put everything into the tank and you were losing your nitrate. It works sometimes for some time for the test, definitely, but I can tell you, latest after half a year, a year, and if you are not managed the situation with the nutrients, they call you back and then they tell you, we have cyanobacteria, we have dinoflagellates. That's for us a perfect job, you know. So we should sell this carbon acid also, because then after 1 year, people coming back saying, hey, we have a problem, and then we can sell another product. Yeah. So, it works like this. I'm very sorry. Many people don't like to hear that, but it is the truth. It's how it works. So go back, make the water changes, take care of your water parameters. Nowadays, the ICP test is totally simple. And we have also, as a sample, we have these ICP supporters. So we choose companies around the world. We train them extremely deeply in ICP, how to do the interpretation, what it means to do with that. We give all the experience what we have over the nearby 40 years now, and people can choose them over the lab account.
You're talking about Quantum Marine having the service.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. That's the certified ICP supporter very soon now also in the US. I think you heard it. Mm-hmm. And for people, is that the best way to go to these supporters, because they know they have all the the data about other labs, about all the other chromes, and can help directly on the base how to manage the reef tank that it comes safe and long time, which is the cheapest way instead of putting all the products in and then maybe is the result or not.
So in terms of what you're talking about there, Claude, you also have another product I wanted to talk about, and that's the balling light set. Can you explain that? Because that's a calcium and alkalinity addition and magnesium, plus it's got traces in it too, right? So that's more of a simplistic type of setup for people that don't want to get into the whole individual trace element dosing, correct?
Yeah. The balling light system is, how we can explain. So in the early 90s, 94, it was a description about this balling classical situation. So dosing a little bit like the two-part with the sodium chloride-free salt as we saw. I see that in this type. I had a big pet store with, I think it was a 15,000-gallon reef tank there. And I was not okay with the theoretical view on this point, and I created a practical way how to dose calcium, alkalinity, magnesium, but together with the right trace elements and macro elements like strontium, like fluorine, iodine, in the right relation according to the needs in the aquarium. So, and that was the balling light set. It's one of the old, it's at the end, the one of the oldest primary care systems for reef tanks. And not only two-part, where everybody's dosing some elements, maybe it's okay or not. It's based on calculation and based on needs. And every tank can be adjusted individually, very simple, over the ICP and over calculators, that you add these elements directly into the calcium and into the carbonate containers. And in Europe, we can really say, meanwhile, that we are a market leader with that type of system, because the development was made for SPS cores as first, and the second is it works not with high concentrated alkalinity solutions to provide that precipitation situation which we have in the most reef tank, which turning then also the tanks to the old tank syndrome. So that was from beginning on the goal, to provide people from this old tank syndrome. It's not only the Lars effect, it has only the problem that you, if you dose too much, if you have too much iron and too much other elements inside that they have to keep out into the skimmers, and you have to provide the cores and the biology the right trace elements and macro elements and halogens that you can keep them in mind. Later then, the ICP is coming, which brings us a lot of more information so we can change the recipes, and we make the recipe better over the time. And that's maybe also the reason why, meanwhile, the most reefers in Europe, they are using that type of system. So, because they find out it's the easiest way to do an individual and a very easy, and at the end, not intensive costs for that to keep the system running.
So let's dig a little bit more into ICP testing and dosing trace elements and such. So I think it was the last time I had you on, or it was one other time that I had you on. We were talking about my nutrient, my cyano issues and algae issues and all that sort of thing. Yeah. You're like, you're dosing too many things. And, in terms of trace element dosing, you should just be sticking with dynamic trace elements. And, zinc, vanadium, copper, nickel, molybdenum, and focus on those. Can you refresh everybody's memory, Claude, as to why you believe that is, important? If somebody is dealing with a cyano issue or some other kind of algae issue, why just focus on dosing the dynamic elements? And let's say you've got zero iron and zero cobalt, and you've got very low magnesium or manganese levels. Why not dose that stuff? Why is it going to be detrimental to dose too many elements versus just dynamic elements?
Okay.
That was a mouthful, by the way, but
we have to go one step back. In the need, in the consumption of calcium and alkalinity, we need separate different elements for all these enzymes and biological process which happens till a core can grow, till a nutrients can be absorbed. And that causes that we need some specific relations between the elements on it. So like magnesium is the stability factor for calcium and alkalinity, is the right relation to the salinity the key of all. So very simple explained is, if I have the half amount of salt in the water, so let me say instead of 35 salinity, we have only 17.5 salinity, the calcium, the magnesium level, the potassium level, everything has to be at a half amount also.
Okay.
And that's the way of the relation. For me, till today, the look on every single element is way too strong on a single one. A good meal is not only a piece of meat. You put some things together, and then you have a good meal. And that's the same here. Also, we need different type of bacteria, vitamins. We need a different type of trace elements, what we have to take, that our body can have to function as it should. And the same is for the cord. So we don't need iodine only for the coloration, let me say, which makes the cord green. We need iodine for over 700 different chemical processes, like fluorine also. Molybdenum is extremely important to protect the cords from the light and at the same time to absorb the nitrogen into the core. The zinc, on the other way, is very important against parasitic. The nickel is very important that they can build the basal plates, and that's only one of a few hundred different roles these elements play around. And these dynamic elements, these are the key ones that we can control, and that is what we need mostly. Iron, manganese, cobalt, and chrome, we have way enough due to the way of what we feed and what we dose. So it's not necessary to have them on a specific higher point. Usually we have way more enough of them.
So if you're getting straight zeros on iron on your ICP test, no need to dose it?
No.
You're getting straight zeros on cobalt, no need to dose it?
No. That's, if you dose systems like I have, the Balling Light, you have definitely enough of them into the normal situation. Plus, which is not calculated by nobody, is what you do as feeding. All the foods containing a lot of trace elements, which coming into the tank, which will be absorbed, which will be which goes to the surfaces, and which will release back into the water. If we do then an MS, we can find some of these levels, because you can see them. But it does not matter if it's now 0.1 or 0.2. The cords don't need this in this case that you have to show it on a standard ICP. That's why we focus on these five, because with that five dynamic elements and the major elements on the top, then you can run a reef tank perfectly.
So let's say somebody is running a refugium, somebody is running, you know, an algae scrubber, and, you know, that kind of system, those kind of systems will be taking up, you know, a lot of trace elements, especially iron. So for those folks that are dosing, that are using macro, you know, algae for their reef tanks, you still don't think they need to dose extra amounts of iodine, iron, and what have you?
As long as the algae are green and growing, no. As long as the gonioporia goes up and you give a core food, you have way more enough of that. And you can read it. If you take a bottle of food, I don't have one here, and you look on the backside, you can read all these elements which are in, and there's a lot of them. We call it there about milligrams. So mostly by a pound of food, you have them in milligrams, not in micrograms. So 1,000 times more is you need, and you put them into the reef tank. If you have signs of a lack, which is very rare, I can tell you, it's really rare. It's only if you do over-filtration with zeolites or with specific adsorbers, then you can cause this. But then you see that the colors go fading, the algae is getting yellow, no more green, And then you can try with iron and with manganese to play around with one or two drops. But these elements are not stable in the water. So they fall out very quickly. They go very quickly out into the skimmers. But due to the daily dose with food, the daily, the weekly water change with salts, and salts containing also a little bit of iron and manganese, in I would say 95% is way more than enough in. We have more the problems that we do over-fertilization with these elements as we have to less.
I saw this question in the chat earlier, and I can't recall who asked the question, but I think the question was, what do you guys feed and recommend in terms of coral food and fish food?
Usually we take our Minas, which is a very specific food. It's very thick, and it's based on natural plankton. It contains no wheat or something like that, which causes very often the problems with the phosphate. It's pure plankton. That's why it's, you try it out, it stinks. It's not very nice to smell it, but it's pure. So it's not water. It's a pure plankton a mixture. It contains everything. That's mostly enough. And for food, we work with granule food or some specific plankton stuff like calanus, oyster eggs, mices. What we never say to use is a brine shrimp. Brine shrimp can be very dangerous for the fish and for the coral.
Because they bring in pathogens?
Yeah. Okay. When the stuff comes from China. Earlier, it comes from San Francisco Bay brine, from the salt lakes. They have no issues with any bacteria because there was no fish and not a lot of birds. But now they're producing in China, and they're producing nearby the freshwater farms. And so the ducks swimming on the fish, taking all the pathogenic part to the brine shrimp ponds, and brine shrimp takes everything in, and they don't care. And if fish eat that, they have bacteria which they don't know, so they have their immune system have quite difficulties, and that causes a lot of problems in the reef tank. So brine shrimp, if you have the eggs, so if you breed your own brine shrimp, the small one, then the Monoplias, I think it calls, that's not a problem. But when you buy them frozen or alive, the big ones, or into the bottles, I would not recommend it at all. And we do a lot of tests, and we find always pathogenic bacteria, which you don't find in lobster eggs and all that other type of marine food.
What about live phytoplankton, raising your own phyto and feeding it to a reef tank?
No. Look, did you ever buy one bottle of this phytoplankton? Did you buy it? So put it. Cook the water away, and then look what you get for $30. About 1 gram. That's more expensive than gold. I have no idea why people use that. So the most of the
plankton. I'm talking about raising your own instead of buying it. I mean, I'm talking about getting a culture of phyto and then raising it.
That would be an idea. Then I'm fully okay if you control the nutrients into the phytoplankton. We find more problems that there were still a lot of nitrate and phosphate and other elements into the phytoplankton. And what I must say, it depends a little bit on the species you go. If you have on SPS coral system, you can use ISO-T, a sample. There's that yellow algae, I think Top Shelf Aquatic breed them also, so we can get them from them. They have a quite good source. It's not that easy, but that's a good source because there we know that Acropora and SPS coral feed it really. But some other species, they don't be well. And it's so expensive for nothing. So if you like to pay $3,000 for a half pound of food, then do that. That's not a problem. But I prefer then to buy vacuum beef and do it on my grill and give them some normal food, my coral, because they're quite healthy.
Let's take some... That's just you. Let's take some more questions from the viewers and folks. If you have any questions for Claude, please drop them in the chat. Kristen Mitchell, a lot of reefers get wrapped up in their SPS corals polyp extension, particularly during daytime. Does Claude think polyp extension during the daytime is a thing reefers should care about, or is it a sign of health or not a sign of health? Polyp extension.
If they have the polyps out during the days?
Yeah, or? Polyp extension during the day. If you don't have it, is that okay still?
Yeah, it could be a problem if you have a lack in halogens and molybdenum, and you have too much light. Then they try to reduce their surface. If they try to push very out, like you know from the zoanthus, when they get very long necks, then they have too less light. It's good to look for. But on the other side, you know, corals react when food is available, and they don't care if it's day or night. In nature, they react in night because there is no reef fishes away who picks on the polyps. And during the day, there's a lot of fish away trying to pick in the polyps. That's the only reason why they are in. If the corals can food over 24 hours a day, they don't care about light. In nature, they feed at night because their food comes up with the plankton. And during the day, not, and the fishes are there. But as soon as they learn that there is a standard dinner coming in, a very nice portion of some minas dropped with a little bit of other food, and then the polyps go out. So that's clean. That's a good sign. So they react on food and they react on smell. That's what they want.
So if you were to advise somebody to, you know, in terms of their fish collection for, you know, let's say an SPS dominant tank, would you tell them not to put in coral nipping angels?
Yeah, it would be maybe a good idea.
Because a lot of people do that, and they're like, I don't care about polyp extension during the daytime. But you think that potentially could be detrimental overall to the coral?
Yeah, we just had this discussion when I was visiting Andrew from Polo, so one of his supporters. I said it's a challenge to do all the corals and have that amount of fish who likes coral polyps. So that's a challenge. What he did in his reef tank there. Yeah. So we will see how good it will be work. I would not every fish I would add. Because I like corals, you know. I'm more the coral guy. Fish I like, that's okay. But I like more on the corals. And every fish who picks on my corals, it's a natural enemy. So we need to eat it.
I'm sort of the same way. It makes me very nervous. But Andrew's fish collection is pretty friggin' awesome. And the corals are not too shabby either. So, yeah.
It's amazing, absolutely. But, you know, when they go on my coral, no.
NSB reefs. Claude, can you explain the relationship with iodine and fluoride? Got high iodine results back, but don't understand how fluoride plays a part.
It shows that over the years and over all the lab accounts what we do, we find out that very often if you have a low fluorine level, which goes under 1 or 0.9, automatically the need and the use of iodine seems to go down. We find very often if we bring the elements in the right relation, then also iodine and fluorine and bromine plays also a role, brings them in the right relations. What is exactly the pure chemical situation, what happens there is not clear. I have some ideas, but it's... I just also talked with Christoph about it from Osiamo, so we talk also very often each other. But it shows definitely on the science and on the numbers and on the experience now over these years, as soon as we put the fluorine level high, the iodine level is more stable and the nutrients levels go down. So, and I think it's the same situation what we have with the magnesium according to stabilize the calcium and the alkalinity. So that's the same on the halogens. I cannot say more and more and more often enough how important the halogens are for the health of all the reef tank, and not only due to the situation that every element has a specific sense. Fluoride, fluorines, a sample, iodine has also the sense to provide bacteria and algae for growing, and makes the corals hard. And that's the same why we use fluorine in the toothpaste to make our teeth hard. And it's the same mineral as corals grow. And we see definitely, and that's what I definitely know, corals producing in the skeleton, not in the skeleton, in the body, they're producing antiparasitic molecules based on sulfate, strontium, and fluoride. In the early 90s, when they developed the standard Belling method or this two-part method, they go back to analysis of quarry bones. So they check only what is in the bone of a quarry, in the skeleton, but they never look on it what is around, what is with the flesh, what is with the whole body. And that's why we have these long fights here in Europe. We have huge discussions in the forums, because I was the guy who said always this is bullshit, and I was not very kind sometimes. I was young, and I'm really sorry about that, but I was passionate. And some of them say, yeah, but the other guy who developed, there was like the Messias, and everything what he said is right. And I say all the time, no, it's bullshit. And I get the proof. My cores were way better than the other guys. And so I said, you have to look everything. You have to look what is in the tank. What is the difference in the tank? In the sea, we don't have, in the sea as sample, we don't have the same water turning around all the day. There comes a wave, and then you have 110,000 gallons of water change within of a second. Yeah. So it's new food and it's new water. And 10,000 years later, the old water comes back, maybe. So that's the situation we breathe. So we turn the shit around, and then we have carbon, we have ozone, we have UV, we have all the stuff what we put in, which is usually way too much. And it has nothing to do with that was in the reef. And too many people looking in the reef, but we don't have it at home. So, and that's why we have to translate that what we know from the reef, what can have an influence in the aquarium. And definitely we see that all the parasitic situations, we can bring them down as soon as the halogens are on top and the elements are there. We never have a big outbreak. We have some worms, we have some Vibrio stuff, but it keeps on 10-20%, and it was not like a fire going through the tank, what we read nowadays very often. But some people selling a carbon who takes iodine out. So, and at this moment, the problem starts. And nobody looks on the carbon. There are so many different carbons on the market that you cannot say carbon is carbon. And the companies who copy others or bringing cheap products fast on the market, they will always say that it's all the same. But it's like tires, like wine, like beer. It's always a little bit different. And how more passion people put in, the how more better product they have usually. And that causes then later not the problems, because a good carbon sample don't take iodine out, or very, very less, because we need that. It's very important to provide too much bacterial growth and too much algae growth. And this fluoride sample also provide the bacteria in the core to grow too fast. That's a protection agent in this way, and not a direct working as we see it usually, you know. And, you know, I'm not sure if I ask you that question, but I think at the first meeting what we have, I ask you, did you know what we breathe? Did you know that?
Repeat that, Claude. Did I know what?
Did you know what we breathe? Did you know the competition of our air? Did you know it?
Oh, what's the competition of our air?
Can you answer it?
Well, there's a lot of trees out there. There's a lot of trees that are... What?
Only two. So we have oxygen and nitrogen, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Oh, you put it every minute, so you should know it. So, and the question is, did we need this nitrogen in the air? Did we need that? So most people will say no, because we need oxygen. But what happens if you put the nitrogen away? With 100% oxygen, we will all burn. So we need the nitrogen to protect us from the aggressivity of the oxygen. So, and that's the same with other elements in the sea for the cores or for bacteria. So that's not only what we have, they have it also. That's why it's so important, this type of elements.
You've talked a lot about fluorine and you know, how you know, what it does in terms of the dynamics of a reef tank and helping the corals, protecting the corals and what have you. You know, I do dose the fluoride, and talk to us though, Claude, about what if somebody wants to start doing that. I mean, obviously they need to do some ICP testing to know what they have, right, in terms of baseline. But that could be a problem, correct? If you overdose fluoride,
it is a problem if you don't have another element on the right level. So every element is in relation to another one in their working. Then it depends which type of fluorine you dose and how much you dose it. One of the key elements for fluorine dosing is vanadium. If you don't have vanadium in the reef tank and you dose too much fluorine then or go over a specific border, then you have a problem with that. If you have this vanadium and you have the right fluorine in your bottle, then you don't have any issues. So you can overdose it. And the specific way how this works is in the lab account then, and we will in our laboratory account, when you have the ICP from us, you will get the right amounts, how much you dose, that you don't have any issues of that. But mostly, and that's a point which is not that difficult in the US, because I see there that the vanadium levels in the wholesalers and the dealers and in the reef tanks, what we check on the US, the vanadium level is always quite on a higher level. I'm not sure actually why this comes from, because in Europe it's not. There's different in Europe. We run with very low vanadium levels here, and in the US, I find out that standard, the vanadium levels are very high. So it is quite less difficult to dose fluorine in the US as in Europe, that you can say.
Gotcha.
It's funny, but it's true.
switching gears here, I saw somebody talking about coral snow treatments in the chat here. What are your thoughts about using coral snow treatments to, keep, as a flocculant, right, to help control detritus and also to help if you've got a cyano issue or prevent cyano and keep crystal clear water? What are your thoughts, Claude, on doing regular coral snow treatments?
First, it depends what is understand about coral snow. If we understand the simple standard coral snow, what some guy is selling, which is more or less clean, very fine calcium carbonate powder, which is quite cheap stuff. The little bit better ones add some zeolite powder. And the really good guys adding 5, 4, 6 different type of carbonates, zeolites, and some organic compounds to it to produce a real coral snow. All of them have a problem. First, you don't take all the particles out due to the skimmer. And that means that everything falling down, even if you use calcium carbonate, it will fall down into the bottom and creating the depot effect. It blocks your sand and it blocks your porosity on your system. If you're lucky, you have enough current and water movement, and you can put it out, and over a filter you can put it away, but in my experience mostly not. Then there is something which also not people have in mind. On very fine particles, so elements, bins, and organic bins very nicely on very small particles. And the micronized zeolite and the micronized calcium carbonate, which you can buy, is under 1 micron big. So the size of the particles is between 0.2 and about 20 microns. And in this size, the most elements will be taking on the nutrient, on these particles, and the stuff goes then down to the bottom. First, it will take away the cyanos, yes, because it absorbs some nutrients. And later they will come back more worse or some other stuff coming because you're creating the depot effect. Better would be if you look for a good skimmer and you take some zeolite in a filter and which you can remove and replace to some new zeolite rocks. They are also cheap to get. They're available all over the world. And you can create their good bacteria grow and you have the export over the bacteria and you will get a super, super crystal clear water. And if you use the right salt, it's also. Most people don't have the right crystal clear water because they use a salt using a wrong anti-caking based on carbonates. Then they add some other carbonates, creating a lot of precipitation, needs a lot of money for trace elements and other stuff, and everything falling down into the rocks. And 1 year, 1.5 year later, they have the problems with algae growing, with all that shit going around. Then they buy at Zobers, then they buy all the other one. It's perfect for the business. I like that. But as a reefer.
So you're basically saying that, you know, this stuff can accumulate over time.
Yeah, sure it does. Everything what you put in, it's not the sea. How it can go, if you look how much you put into the reef tank and you check how much is in the skimmer, so where's all the rest? It's still in the tank and you have to put it out. It comes a time. As long as your corals grow and the grow is massive, it's not a problem. But one time, you know, a short mistake, a holiday, too much food in, whatever causes happens, the corals stop the growing, the bacteria take the rest. And if it's there is a lot, you start all the shit again. So, like I say, I have two views on it. As a producer, I like this way.
Right, because people are buying products.
I have no idea why they do it.
Quickly, water changes. What percent and how often?
10% weekly.
10% weekly.
Yeah, but the water change, very important. We never say don't do water change. So we keep all the years when I'm on the market. I know there are some other companies saying you don't need a water change. With my ICP runs well. Okay, maybe. I keep the water change because I think if you keep animals at home, you have a responsibility of that. These are animals. And that means that you should take these 10 minutes or 20 minutes in a week to clean the tank, to clean the skimmer. And in this type of working, you remove some water, you suck off the dirt, the detritus on the way, and clean the tank and put some fresh water on it. That's my definition of water change. It's not only that I take 10% out and 10% in. I take care 20 minutes of the reef tank, and in this type of work, I remove some, I check my salinity, I check my animals, and then I do this type of water change. And if I do that regularly, like I say, discipline, then I can go to holidays and I have not a problem then to let it stay for 2 or 3 weeks under control when I'm using the ICP under control. So that's my definition of water change, is take 20 minutes in a week to keep your animals healthy, because we have the responsibility for
it. What about mechanical filtration? Do you like filter socks or filter rolls?
None of them.
None?
None of them.
What about, so what do you advocate for mechanical filtration? Do you not think that's necessary?
Every chemical filtration has the disadvantages that it reduces the skimmer work. Even these modern, how is the name of
fleece
them?
Rollers?
The filtrated fleece rollers. All of them reducing the skimmers. So very often, if people have issues with too high nitrates, even when they have these fleece rolls, take the fleece rolls out and you will see mostly then the nutrients come down. So, because some of them are wrong, that's the wrong construction. So the food stuff takes too long and can decompose and then releases all the nutrients then in the water. Filtration should be going fast and put it out if you want to put the stuff out. I think way better is, you can use a filter sock if it's washed very often, then it has not the much effect on the skimmer. You clean the tank, you work on it, and then you put one of these filter socks for, let me say, 1-3 hours, and then put it out and let over the week the skimmer running. Have a look that you have enough water flow through the sump into the tank, enough current in the tank that, and put it on a way that the water current push the particles into the sump. I see it so often that they press the water away from the overflow. If you turn the current that it push the water into the overflow and goes into the sump, then I clean the sump. When I do the water change, I clean the sump, I clean the skimmer, and I take care that the skimmer is strong enough and it's always clean, that they do the full power. And then they take out all these small particles. And if after I worked in, so I produce a lot of particle into the water, I add these filter socks in for a few hours, and then I put them away, I clean them again, and then I let the tank run. That's my way to do it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there is a lot of ways to reef, and you know, people have success doing things you know, many different ways, but yeah, it's I've always been using filter socks, but I guess I'm guilty in terms of not cleaning them often enough.
Maybe once of the reason you have some cyanobacteria.
Ooh, yeah. There you go. No, that's that, you know, that's that could be fair. So do you think filter socks are you know, not necessary? I mean, you know, I think Sanjay doesn't run any mechanical filtration.
The most successful reef tanks don't have them. That's what I can say. And the most farms, they reduce them also now step by step, because it's always good, you know. You have a new technology, and it happens very often. Then it's sold around. Everybody uses it. A few people say, hey, I have a super clear water. It runs quite well. But what you don't hear is, after half a year, after 1 year, how many people say, I don't understand why I have high nutrients on that. And then it's not discussed openly, so maybe reduce that. It depends also on the filter, and it depends also on the material which is used. These plastics and these materials of the filters sometimes makes a problem, same as adsorbers, to the water stability. So the skimmers don't work that good as they could, and that's why you have the problems there. If you have a really good material which have no effect on the water, then it could be very positive. If you have a large fish amount, if you have a lot of dirt in the tank, then it could be helpful for some time, definitely. Right. So it's not to say it's bad or no bad. Even the filter socks can be very helpful. But when I have the situation that the nutrients raising up and I get in disbalance, sometimes it's better to clean the tank and to go two steps back and do it on the standard way. Some water change, good skimming, change, look for the current into the tank that it's correctly installed, and don't dose too much of this particleized stuff.
So you're saying if I have filter socks and they're backing up on me every like 5, 6, 7 days, that's not a good thing?
Let me say, in other words, I can fully understand why this happens. So I have also problems with discipline in these cases. So that's good why I have staff and I have a lab. Because when I do it on my own, I will not do any water tests because I hate it to drop it and I hate to clean socks, something like that. I think I find a way more because I'm so lazy and I hate to clean all the things. So they said this must run without, and I don't care.
Yeah, I've always cleaned, you know, once a week. And I hate having to like double down on that, but yeah, probably a good idea. Yeah. Now I played around with a lot of my filter socks. I've got Royal Exclusive Dreambox sumps, and they've got 10 filter socks with 3 different micron sizes, and you know, I've played around with that. So
you know, there's who did this? I think Clear. You know them?
Clear
filter.
Oh. Clearwater filter.
I see that.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure.
I don't know who produced them, because I see them, and when I was in Corey's warehouse, I see them there, and this is really great. We don't have that in Europe, because filter socks is not that much used here in Europe as in the US. And you can put this automatic filter roll into the box where the filter socks step in, so you can automize your filter socks. So that was a good idea.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Innovative.
So you don't need to clear the filter socks. You put it out. You can put the clear filter in. It calls clear. Yeah, I think it calls clear filter. And then you have automatically, you have the filtration there. And that was a really good idea.
All right. I've got another random question for you. And then I want to have one other question from the viewers ask you. And then we'll let you go to sleep.
Okay. Now I'm awake.
You're just going to roll right into, you're already into Tuesday or Wednesday there. So, fluconazole for bryopsis. Yes, no.
Yes.
Yes?
That's the best way. Yeah. It's really hard to get rid of them without that. So, if you can get it and you're lucky that you can get it, use it, follow the instruction, doing after some thing. it's used 10,000 times, and it shows that it's a safe way. It's also an antibiotic.
I thought it was an antifungus medication.
No, it's yes, but only when you use it on GERDs. So if you use it in a reef tank, it has also antibiotic infection. So the function of fluconazole is we have some two specific type of gram-positive bacteria who works with green hair algae sometimes and with Bryopsis. And if you bring these bacteria into the reef tank, and you have some more nitrate and ammonia production in the system, so if you have some issues with the nitrogen level, also lacks of halogens, then it's possible that you get a Bryopsis. Mostly, you import them with the mariculture stuff from Indonesia, from Bali. So there's a source from these rocks. And the fluconazole goes directly into these two specific bacteria and works there as an antibiotic. It has nothing to do with the antifungal situation why fluconazole is normally used. It is the antibiotic effect.
So it will impact the microbiome of the reef tank?
No, not really, because mostly we have gram-negative bacteria on it, and it works specific on gram-positive.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
I never see huge effect in the reef tank. It's about 1 week, 10 days, you see that it goes a little bit up and down. Nutrients go up, and later they go down. That's possible. But I think at the moment, against Bryopsis, even if it's strong, then it's better you do that. An alternative way is the Caribbean snails, the turbo snails from the Caribbean. They eat it really good.
They would eat Bryopsis? I thought they don't touch that stuff.
Yeah. No, they eat it. The big ones. Turbo, not the Cetosus, the other one.
Astrinia? No, not Astrinia. Astria. Yeah. No.
No, not Astria. They're really Mexican turbo snail. I think so. I don't remember. It's too late now. It's the Mexican turbo snail. They eat it really good, and the most make the mistake is when they see first it coming, they try to push it away, and then they spread it over the whole tank. So that's the most difference. Also there, make it a bit cooler, make an ICP, bring all the levels on the right level, and then you can, if it's worse, then you can add the fluconazole before, add some turbo snails, and if you want to remove it, then at the same time, you suck the water out. So you can remove it with a knife, and then take all this out, and then it's quite safe. To.
So if you're plucking it, and you're, I guess some of the part of the Bryopsis gets, you know, blown into the water column. That's not a good thing.
No, that's a bad thing. Spread. So then,
but
then it spreads.
But apparently, bubble algae, that doesn't matter. If you pop the bubble algae, the spores won't cause other bubble algae to sprout up.
Some say yes, some say no. I'm not sure. I think no.
Okay.
So, One time I cleaned a tank with a toothbrush because I was really mad of them, and then they were all done and never come again. But also there, the only thing what I can tell you, which is 100% clear, is if you bring the relations between nitrate and phosphate to 1 to 100, you will not have any algae grow. It doesn't matter if you have high nutrients levels or not. They hate, algaes hate this. If you go on Redfield, yeah, you will have algaes because algae is like Redfield.
16 to 1.
I have no idea ever why somebody write this down. So they must be completely hammered because it is made for algaes. And I don't know. I won't keep corals. I don't want algaes in my reef tank. So go to 101 and I can guarantee you if you have all the other levels quite okay, you will not have any algaes. You will not have Bryopsis, you will not have any of that other shit. You will not have it because they hate this. They really hate it. And I can guarantee you that. And I write it down since 5 years. And since 5 years, they know it's the Redfield. It's like, no, it's not the fucking Redfield. Redfield is for phytoplankton. And I don't want to keep phytoplankton in my reef tank. I don't understand what is so difficult to understand on that. It's simple. So.
That's good. That's good to know. All right, last question from a viewer, Big ES Claude. What is the biggest issue facing German reefers out there? This is a specific question for German reefers. What's the biggest problem you're seeing there in Germany with reef keepers that they face?
Did the guy ask me know that I live in Germany? And when I say these things, it has maybe massive effect on it?
You could pass. So how, you could pass on that question.
You want a honest answer, right?
You could bullshit. Two problems.
No, we have two problems. The first is that people don't read. They're lazy for reading. The second problem is that to most of them thinks they're great reefers. And the biggest mistake is to underestimate our reefer girls. Because the ladies are, I must say the ladies are mostly way better in reef keeping as all the men are. Mm. And I'm a little bit unlucky about it that it's not a girl's hobby, because when this reef keeping was a girl's hobby, I will be a billionaire within 2 years, because they're so crazy in buying corals and stuff, and they're really, really good. And the most men do absolutely underestimate the girls in reef keeping, and that's I think it's a big mistake for the Germans.
What women reef keepers in Germany, can you call any out that are standouts in your mind there? Any well-known German reef keeper ladies out there that you want to mention? Oh,
yeah, there are several ones. They I don't know if they're known by names in the US or something like that. So like I say, they are underestimated. So I have some of them, but there's only a few percent who do that with passion. And like I say, the most people, we have great reefers here, but like great reefers we have in Italy and in the US and in Japan, all over the world. But what I don't like at the moment is that so many people don't read. So we see it at the lab account. So they get the PDF. What's going on? I say, hey, there's a lab database in the background, so you can have tons of information. But we need to write it down. We can make videos, but you will not find all the videos. If you write it down, you can read that. And nowadays, people don't have patience. So a reef... to take a reef keeping is something who is go fishing is too much stress. So then you go make reef keeping. So it's something who takes years to bring it out. So you need patience, and you need somebody which works as a mentor who mm-hmm. can you ask. And that's why we have these ICP supporter program. That it's clear that we said this guy we tested, we know they're well known. And there you go there, and then you have somebody who helps with experience. So that's why we don't do certification for everybody. We do certification with people who have minimum the 10 years experience and has an idea about what happens in the reef keeping and find out the right way to get a problem off the reef tank. We don't have too much issues. We have 10, 12 different issues in the reef keeping if you deal with a lot of people. But every reef tank is a little bit its own, and you have also to deal with the reefer by self. And you know, some we have engineers who running after numbers. We have people who are, they don't care about a number. And you have to deal with the people differently to get really good results. And so you need wise people who can deal with persons, and that's what we search for. And we search people who have experience and knowledge and who prove that they can do reef keeping. And then we do the certification, so that's why we have the supporter there. Like I say, soon we will have also here in the US one, and they're really, I can say, they're really experienced reefers. So, so starters, beginners, everybody who don't have had the experience now, and you cannot have the experience within 2 years or 3 years, have somebody where they can contact and when they can order from them stuff or order some advice or whatever.
Gotcha. All right. One last quick question. Sturgis Reef, are prepaid mailing coming to your ICP test in the States?
I think so, yes.
Okay.
We try to fix it so that it's possible. Yeah. It's a little bit difficult.
Yeah, I
from
hear you.
Outside.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, Claude. Well, listen, man, I appreciate you being up in the wee hours of the morning there in Germany. Anything else you wanted to say? Anything else you wanted to plug?
Yeah. Keep on reef keeping and don't look on governments who want to destroy this hobby and to do forbidden. Yeah. Go on the street, throw with ski mate around you if they want to stop this business. Oh, it's in Europe they want. I heard also in the US it's always some people going around, some of these extremists, and wanted to stop this business. So go on the street and tell the people that's a stupid idea. The zoological gardens and the aquariums are very important for the kids, that they know about the nature. And it's I think reef keeping makes better people because they take care of animals. And I think it's very important to do that. And what I want to also say, there is a great school in Iowa.
Iowa.
It's, in Iowa is a school for aquarists, where young people going there. They're not so much in social media. There are, that's a high school. I will give you the address soon, so you can maybe publish there.
Yeah.
And I 100% sure that this school is the greatest place what I visited in the last years in the US. Wow. A lot of kids, 300 types of aquariums. You can see that on the Phonomarine YouTube. You can see that because we're visiting the school. It's Marine Science Campus in Iowa. Hmm. So we have some contacts to there. They're breeding shrimps, they're breeding stuff, they're doing habitats, and these kids doing that all on their free time and to becoming nearby the high school to becoming aquarists. And all of these kids have a great success in all the public aquariums. They can go on to there. But what they need, I think they need really more people looking on it. Maybe donate some of them that the kids can buy the stuff because they have to buy everything and sometimes they pay a lot of for their technical stuff. So like a school, they have not that much of money. And I think we have so many tons of stuff which they can use. So maybe somebody wants to like to write them if they need something, if they can help them. It's the Marine Science Campus in Iowa.
Yeah, send me the link. Or I'll look for the link and put it in the...
Yeah, so that was the best of my last journeys. We were 2 months in the States. But that was the greatest place. It was so unexpected from my side. Old reef tanks, 7, 8 year girls breeding shrimps and coming
That's
there
awesome.
And asking, oh, awesome. did you have a trick for me? They were so proud of all the corals they breed and keep there. And I thought we will see 10, 20 tanks, and it was about 300
wow.
aquariums. And it was, you know, you go in and you will never leave that school. So I was so happy. I think they can really need some more help. And maybe I can give you the contact to Kirk, which is the boss of them. And so maybe you can invite him once so he can show what they do there, because it's amazing place. We don't have that in Europe, which is a big mistake, I think. I tried to install that here also. But with our governments, I don't know if that's possible. If you had it in the States, that's really great. So that's for me for the...
Yes, Messiah Mitra says, Sea Friendly Reefer did a video on that. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. Exactly. Sea Friendly Reefer was also there. He shows there, exactly. Sea Friendly, Abyss did a video, and Fauna Marine did a video. So we three was there. So everybody makes a video about it.
Well, Claude, man, thanks. Thank you so much for taking the time again and staying up late. I really appreciate you coming on and chatting with us again. Got to always get a lot out of these conversations, Claude, and I know people tuning in do as well. So thank you very much.
It's always.
Yeah. I also want to thank my sponsors one more time, Polar Reef. They don't sell products, but their sponsorship of this channel stems from Andrew's belief in supporting individuals dedicated to educating and sharing information about the hobby. With that in mind, I highly recommend you check out Polar Reef's latest video, Quarantine Basics Part 2. It has a wealth of information on the Polar Reef YouTube channel. Champion Lighting and Supply, another sponsor. Check out this really cool foot pedal switch from Blue Line that I'm showing off right here that I have. I've used it for my frag bandsaw, and you could also use it for pumps and power heads for water change. It's very handy. If you're interested in picking one up, then visit championlighting.com. And finally, GHL, as I mentioned, I am all in on using GHL products. I have a lot of success using their dosers and ProFlux controllers and Mitra lights and cage director, and etc. They produce high-quality German-engineered products. For more information or to purchase their stuff, you can visit aquariumcomputer.com/USA, and I also sell their stuff on reefbomb.com. A big thank you to Paul, the moderator, who's also the president of Boston Reefer Society. Please join and support your local reefing clubs. They are so important to this hobby. Also want to let you know that all episodes of Rapping with Reef Bum are available as podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Amazon. My next Rapping with Reef Bum live stream will be on Tuesday, March 12th, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. My guest will be Ken Colby from High Tide Aquatics in Oakland, California. You can check out the full upcoming schedule of guests on reefbum.com under the YouTube section. Until then, be safe and be well. Later.